You're listening to the CyberWire Network, powered by N2K.
Hey, everybody. Today, I want to highlight a name that all of us know well, and that is our sponsor, Splunk. You need to keep operations humming around the clock, but potential disruptions are everywhere. Splunk helps you predict problems and find and fix issues fast so you can reduce risk and ditch downtime. The world's largest enterprises rely on Splunk's unified security and observability platform to become more efficient, resilient, and innovative. With Splunk, you can react quickly, evolve faster, and be ready for anything. Stay ahead of disruptions. Learn more at splunk.com/resilience. And we thank Splunk for sponsoring our show. In the dynamic world of enterprise security, identity architects and IT leaders face a major challenge. Growth by repeated acquisitions multiplies the complexity of everything. Multiple IDPs, MFA providers, policy engines that all need to coexist. This can lead to fragmented user identities and policies that create security vulnerabilities and add access friction. Strata Identity solves this. Now you can decommission unneeded IDPs and consolidate the ones you'd like to keep without rewriting apps or disrupting users, engineers, and app owners. Plus, Strata's modular architecture makes it easy to integrate with any identity provider without manual maintenance and coding. Join the ranks of cybersecurity leaders using identity orchestration. Visit strata.io/cyberwire, share your top identity security priorities, and receive a pair of complimentary AirPods Pro. Offer valid for organizations with over 5,000 employees. Step into a new era of identity management at strata.io/cyberwire. A quick security retrospective on Super Tuesday, a day on which no dogs barked or bears growled or kittens yowled or pandas did whatever it is that pandas do. The Cyberspace Solarium previewed the good government framework it intends to recommend in next Wednesday's final report. The EU uses its rapid alert system against coronavirus disinformation. U.S. aid will go to Ukraine for cybersecurity capability building. And backups are an attack surface, too. From the CyberWire studios at DataTribe, I'm Dave Bittner with your CyberWire summary for Wednesday, March 4th, 2020. Voting in yesterday's Super Tuesday U.S. presidential primaries was uneventful from a security point of view. Any problems voters encountered, and problems were by no means endemic, were the result of ordinary friction and not the effects of foreign interference, the Voice of America reports. And as NBC News observes, also largely absent, was evidence of serious disinformation. CISA told NextGov that they'd seen no malicious activity during the voting. Not all went smoothly, of course, simply because nothing really ever does. The Washington Post has a summary of technical glitches, many associated with new technology that voters found frustrating at the polls. Some newly fielded voting machines in Los Angeles County, for one thing, failed to work, casting some doubt on the new technology's reliability. And people in Texas got robot calls telling them that Republicans and independents should vote Tuesday, but Democrats should turn up on Wednesday. The calls are under investigation, but don't appear to have had much effect. Other problems required poll workers to revert to manual lists in some other California counties when electronic poll books failed. Beyond that, there were the sorts of scattered local government website outages that in normal times are simply background noise. The relative absence of organized disinformation didn't necessarily calm all the rumor control gatekeepers. Some of them seem to have picked up a case of the yips, unless that's just the algorithm talking. Twitter, for example, briefly limited status quo's Jordan Sheraton's account when the progressive journalist retweeted former Vice President Biden's slip of the tongue, urging voters to turn out for Super Thursday. Twitter sternly admonished Mr. Sheraton that you may not post content providing false information about voting or registering to vote. So there, Besides, it was a Tuesday, not a Thursday. Don't confuse the voting public. As a public service, we'd like to point out that any of you who misunderstood something you saw in your Twitter feed and put off voting until tomorrow, well, you and the candidate of your choice are just out of luck. The Cyberspace Solarium, the U.S. Blue Ribbon Policy Commission, previewed its recommendations yesterday. As we heard, one of the big points they made was commending the sort of well-informed citizenship that would easily recognize that a candidate meant Tuesday when he accidentally said Thursday, and that saying, hey, check out this thing candidate so-and-so just said, wasn't actually engaged in voter suppression. The commissioners recommended voters get their information from state election sites where, we are reliably informed, people have regular access to calendars. The commissioners promised, The Hill says, 75 specific recommendations for cyber strategy when they report later this month. The Cybersecurity Solarium's co-chair, Senator Angus King, Democrat of Maine, summed up the Solarium's goal as define, develop, defend, and deter. The commission is working to define a structure whereby we're going to confront this challenge and develop relationships with allies so these norms can be applied internationally. That structure will encompass not only approaches to stopping cyber attacks, but also plans for continuity and resilience when attacks succeed. We'll never completely prevent successful cyber attacks, and that, the senator said, is why deterrence forms another essential component of the recommended framework. A few of the specific recommendations will be that election officials use paper ballots, that a fifth nonpartisan member be added to the U.S. Election Assistance Commission to break the deadlock too often achieved by the EAC's current two-Democrat, two-Republican membership, and that the U.S. embark on a civic education program to make citizens more skeptical about disinformation. The Cyberspace Solarium's final report is expected out next week on Wednesday, March 11th. Chris Kubik is the Chief Information Security Officer at Fidelis Cybersecurity. Prior to joining Fidelis, he led a distinguished career at the National Security Agency, where he held senior technical roles, including the NSA Chief Information Security Officer. He shares his insights on protecting that which is valuable online.
At the National Security Agency, I was certainly in the trenches there. That's a very large organization, lots of IT technology there. So it was a very demanding job, working at Fidelis Cybersecurity. We're a much smaller company. So that makes things a little easier as far as taking care of the IT. However, in this position, I'm also helping with the product evolution, and working with our product teams, taking the experience that I've had at National Security Agency and helping to improve the product, as well as, working with our customers, helping them with, some of the enterprise level strategy for security. That's an important piece to go along with the technology. So this particular job's, quite a bit different than the other one where I was completely inwardly focused on the IT security. This one has a lot more external facing responsibilities.
Are there any particular insights that you feel like you can bring from your time at the agency?
Certainly. I think the most important thing is, particularly if you have a large enterprise network, that network is constantly changing. It's very easy to kind of lose configuration control of what you have as part of the enterprise. So I think some important things there are, bring in some automated capabilities to help you kind of map out the terrain that you're trying to defend, and really sort of build that catalog of the assets that are included within your environment. Certainly keeping an eye on Internet of Things that seem to creep into our environment and making sure that you can map those out and understand how they're connected. But really understanding that terrain, understanding those assets and how they're configured, whether they're well patched and all those types of things, that's really very critical to trying to defend a large enterprise. And then, going beyond that, you have to be really good at the cyber hygiene basics, making sure you're keeping your patches up to date, because, the attacks vectors still are almost all exploiting either, using phishing or using unpatched vulnerabilities to really gain that foothold within your environment, or really using a combination of both. So it's important to be good at the, the basics, the cyber hygiene. And then on top of that, you have to have some automation built in to be able to, kind of distill all of the different alerts that are being generated across your enterprise and really kind of roll those up into some higher level conclusions that are kind of higher confidence alerts that the cyber analysts can dive in and really take a look at, because most enterprises with the combination of multiple tools, the volume of alerts being generated just overwhelms the analyst today. So whatever can be done from a machine learning automation standpoint to be able to get higher confidence in your alerts and be able to help the analyst focus in on what's most critical is really important in a large enterprise.
You know, I'm curious, as your role as Chief Information Security Officer there at Fidelis, from a leadership point of view, how do you set your priorities for yourself and your team as you look to the year ahead? How do you set those priorities and decide where you and your team are going to spend their resources?
You know, I've only been with Fidelis for a couple of months now, so you know, I'd say for any new CISO that's coming into an organization, it's really kind of important first to get to know the people that are, you know, have been in place of securing the environment and sit down with them and understand from them kind of where things stand from a security standpoint. It's important to understand the culture of the organization and really kind of step back a little bit and understand kind of what the risk tolerance is for the organization. And, you know, kind of based on that, you kind of understand where, you know, some of the potential gaps would be, kind of understand what the risk tolerance is. You can start to prioritize, at least in my case, having worked a lot with large enterprises, I think where a lot of people fall down is just doing things consistently across the board. You know, you have development environments, you have production environments, you have corporate IT environments, and you tend to have multiple teams working that and things can get out of sync. So, you know, I think looking across the board there, and just looking at kind of the best practices that are occurring within each team and then trying to be able to do that consistently and, you know, with rigor across the entire collection of IT systems is a good place to start.
I can imagine it must be something of a culture shift for you, even just being able to, you know, at the end of the day, to be with your friends and family and say, hey, this is what I did at work today.
Well, that certainly has been a change for my wife because I didn't have the opportunity to talk about work too much. You know, the other big change is, you know, most of my work was done on closed networks. So, you know, you didn't take your work home with you unless you got a phone call in the middle of the night. So now I'm connected 7x24. So that's a little bit of a culture shock right there.
That's Chris Kubik from Fidelis Cybersecurity. The European Union has used its rapid alert system, an approach to controlling disinformation by information sharing and coordinated messaging, to respond to widely distributed fake news about COVID-19, Euractiv reports. The U.S. State Department has allocated $8 million in cybersecurity assistance to the government of Ukraine, according to The Hill. It's a capability-building project. Some of Foggy Bottom's $8 million will go to the U.S. Agency for International Development's cybersecurity project, which plans to invest $38 million over 4 years to build Ukraine's cybersecurity capabilities. The recent ransomware trend in which the attackers steal the victim's data before they encrypt it may, if Bleeping Computer has it right, have taken a surprising turn. Apparently, Doppelpaymer and Maze ransomware operators, at least, are going after cloud backups as their source of sensitive files. It's a bit surreal, but both Doppelpaymer and Maze seemed happy to answer questions from Bleeping Computer, just as if they were legitimate IT businesses. "Yes, we download them," said the Maze gang, referring to cloud backups. They went on to add, "It is very useful. No need to search for sensitive information. It is definitely contained in backups. With backups in the cloud, it is even easier. You just log in to cloud and download it from your server. Full invisibility to data breach detection software. Clouds is about security, right?" Doppelpaymer's controllers offer this take. "Cloud backups are a very good option against ransom, but do not 100% protect, as cloud backups are not always good configured. Offline backups often outdated. The system of backups is really nice, but human factor leaves some options." So there you have it. Do backup your data, but do so securely. And now, a word from our sponsor, Zscaler, the leader in cloud security. Cyber attackers are using AI in creative ways to compromise users and breach organizations. In a security landscape where you must fight AI with AI, the best AI protection comes from having the best data. Zscaler has extended its Zero Trust architecture with powerful AI engines that are trained and tuned by 500 trillion daily signals. Learn more about Zscaler Zero Trust Plus AI to prevent ransomware and AI attacks. Experience your world secured. Visit zscaler.com/zerotrustAI. The IT world used to be simpler. You only had to secure and manage environments that you controlled. Then came new technologies and new ways to work. Now, employees, apps, and networks are everywhere. This means poor visibility, security gaps, and added risk. That's why Cloudflare created the first-ever connectivity cloud. Visit cloudflare.com to protect your business everywhere you do business. And joining me once again is Joe Kerrigan. He's from the Johns Hopkins University Information Security Institute, also my co-host on the Hacking Humans podcast. Joe, great to have you back.
Hi, Dave.
Interesting news out of the FBI. They've been doing some work over a number of years, and sounds like they've got some success here. What can you share with us?
Yeah, these are some Romanian hackers that have been sentenced, and this is directly from FBI.gov. Mm-hmm. So it looks like this is the FBI taking a well-deserved victory lap for this one.
Yeah.
They're talking about the Bayrob group, which was a Romanian hacker group.
Okay.
And they got attention back in 2007 when an Ohio woman wired thousands of dollars to an eBay seller thinking that she was buying a car, and the car never arrived. She went to local police, and the listing did not appear on their computers. And what had happened was is she had some malware installed on her computer that was not allowing her to go to eBay, but instead sending her to the hacker sites.
So she went to a site that looked like eBay.
Looked like eBay, but was not eBay. In fact, her browser probably even said that she was at eBay because a common tactic in the early 2000s was to infect a computer and essentially put a host file in there that would – that's the first place your computer checks when you enter a DNS name, which is what eBay.com is.
I see.
So if you enter eBay.com into the host file and put another IP address after it, it'll go to that IP address. It won't even go out to DNS and look for it.
Ah.
Or it wouldn't even go out to DNS and look for it.
Right.
I don't know how it works now, but
yeah.
You know, it's the same thing in Linux. There's a file in the Etsy directory called hosts that does the same thing. So you don't even need to bother querying DNS services. Or maybe that host doesn't even have a name in a DNS server. It's just something you want to call it, right? So like I want to connect to Dave's machine. So I type SSH Joe at Dave's machine and it goes out and I don't have to remember what your IP address is.
Okay.
Because humans aren't really good at remembering numbers. We're much better at remembering names.
Right.
Anyway, these malicious actors would then launder this money, of course, and they use money mules and all kinds of other stuff. And they were really good at being nimble and covering their tracks, according to this thing. They use multiple layers of proxies to hide their locations. When you have a VPN, if you're running a VPN and then inside of that you're running another VPN, right? Your exit point is one thing, but it can absolutely mask where you're coming from, make it very difficult to find you.
Okay.
As they gained more victims, though, they had more people entering the investigation. So the FBI worked with numerous law enforcement agencies around the world, including some companies like AOL, eBay, and Symantec were involved on this. And beginning in 2012, the Bayrob group began to diversify their criminal enterprise because now it's, as I've always said on this, the market changes, right?
Yeah.
So they would continue to spread malware via spam and social media, but they also got into crypto mining, credit card number, carding, as it's called, selling and buying and selling credit card numbers on the dark web.
Right.
And they had all these infected systems that from their first effort, and they still had these systems out there. They were continuing to grow this huge network of malicious systems so they could send these emails out and spam out, and it was difficult to catch them. But a break came when they made a mistake, and this is usually what happens.
Right.
One of these guys logged into his personal email account instead of his criminal account, and AOL caught it. And they were investigating some abuse of their network, and they connected the two accounts. And through that, they were able to find some social media accounts, and then they were able to get the Romanian police involved, the Romanian National Police, and they arrested them in 2016. So these guys operated for 9 years, from 2007 to 2016. They had become one of the top senders of malicious email.
And it all unraveled because somebody
didn't have good
got
OPSEC.
A little sloppy.
Right.
Yeah.
One mistake. This is the case where the bad guys have to be good 100% of the time.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Normally we say the good guys have to be good 100% of the time. The bad guys only have to be good once. when you're a bad guy, your OPSEC has to be good 100% of the time if law enforcement is looking at you. Because if they catch you, this is what will happen. Anyways, these guys were brought to trial in the U.S. They were extradited. One of them got 20 years in prison. Another one got 18 years in prison. And a third, he pled guilty and was sentenced to 10 years in prison.
Hmm.
They made $4 million during the process, though.
Yeah, over the course of
several
years. Yeah. Still real money.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. Well, it's a happy ending, I suppose. I mean, it's a well-earned win on behalf of the FBI and their partners around the world.
Yes. In this article, the FBI was thanked the Romanian National Police. They said they wouldn't have been able to do it without them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it really is a global effort these days.
It is. Really it has to be.
Yeah, yeah.
Absolutely has to be, because if there's a non-cooperative government, you're not going to catch the guys.
Mm-hmm. All right, Joe Kerrigan, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.
Managing the requirements for modern security programs is increasingly challenging and time-consuming. Enter Vanta. Vanta gives you one place to centralize and scale your security program. Quickly assess risk, streamline security reviews, and automate compliance for ISO 27001, SOC 2, and more. You can leverage Vanta's market-leading trust management platform to unify risk management and secure the trust of your customers. Plus, use Vanta AI to save time when completing security questionnaires. CyberWire daily listeners can get $1,000 off by going to vanta.com/cyber. That's vanta.com/cyber.
And that's the CyberWire. For links to all of today's stories, check out our daily briefing at thecyberwire.com. And for professionals and cybersecurity leaders who want to stay abreast of this rapidly evolving field, sign up for CyberWire Pro. It'll save you time and keep you informed. Listen for us on your Alexa smart speaker, too. The CyberWire podcast is proudly produced in Maryland out of the startup studios of Data Tribe, where they're co-building the next generation of cybersecurity teams and technologies. Our amazing CyberWire team is Elliot Peltzman, Peru Prakash, Stefan Vaziri, Kelsey Bond, Tim Nodar, Joe Kerrigan, Carol Terrio, Ben Yellen, Nick Vilecki, Gina Johnson, Bennett Moe, Chris Russell, John Petrick, Jennifer Iben, Rick Howard, Peter Kilpie, and I'm Dave Bittner. Thanks for listening. We'll see you back here tomorrow. Now a word from our sponsor, Netskope. Netskope is a worldwide leader in SASE and Zero Trust. Its unified platform, Netskope One, provides optimized access and Zero Trust security for people, devices, and data anywhere they go, helping customers reduce risk, accelerate performance, and get unrivaled visibility into any cloud, web, and private application activity. To learn more about how Netskope helps customers be ready for anything on their SASE journey, visit netskope.com.